Sorry for the harsh stop to the music, but it's time to get going. Hope everybody's doing well. How's the conference so far?
It's early.
I'm sorry for that, but this is what time they gave me. Hope everybody's got their coffee going, had some breakfast. Up late last night, anybody? No? Okay, good, good. So you're all refreshed. That's what I like to see. So I was wandering around a little bit, talked to a few people before the show, trying to figure out exactly what you want to know. And I think I have some ideas, which is good. My name is Larry Guger. I'm a program manager within Visual Studio Ultimate. I own IntelliTrace, and I say own as in, you know, I make the decisions. So when you say, you know, that part is kind of not so good, I'm the guy to blame. So bring it on, because what I want to know is how I can make it better for you guys. And what I'm going to do is something a little bit different. I'll get my little clicker here. I'm going to start off by asking for questions. And really what this tool is all about is helping you resolve problems in code in applications that are running somewhere that's not your dev environment. Now, we work in Visual Studio in F5 when you're debugging, and that's cool. That's what we delivered with Visual Studio 2010. With Visual Studio 2012, really what we're pushing is what I'm calling IntelliTrace Everywhere. You may have heard as IntelliTrace in production. I like Everywhere better because it doesn't have to be in production. Some people are going to be scared to put it into production, and that's fair. So try it in your test environments. Try it in your staging environments. Try it wherever you want. What I'm going to do here, and a few people have said, you're nuts to do that. So that's my cell phone, right? It's right here. You got some questions. Feel free to text anytime. And hopefully I'll get a chance to get to them, either during the show or towards the end. And if I don't, I'm going to be at the Visual Studio ALM booth pretty much all afternoon. So you can always come and track me down there as well. Okay. So what you'll also see is I've kept my cell phone number down at the bottom of the screen. And remember, I'm getting your numbers when you text me too, so I know who you are. Standalone collector. So this is something that we've been pushing a lot with Visual Studio 2012. This is also known as IntelliTrace in production, IntelliTrace ever, whatever you want to call it. We have published a CAB file onto the internet that anybody can download. No licensing restrictions. I don't care if you have Visual Studio or not. It really doesn't matter. You can go, I'm getting texts already. You can go and you can download this CAB for free, and it actually comes as an executable. So you accept the license agreement, because we have to have that. And what it's going to do, it's going to drop a CAB file onto your machine that you can then extract. Well, that thing's buzzing like crazy. That you can extract, and then you can start to use our standalone collector wherever you want. This can be your customers downloading it, extracting it, using IntelliTrace to gather data that they then ship back to you to help debug the problems with your application. We work on desktop applications. We work with web applications hosted in IIS, and we have specific, slightly different support for both of those models. And like I said, we work in production or not, right? Your choice, wherever you want to use us. I don't care. One of the questions that I had as I was roaming the crowd is, where don't we work? I currently do not support Windows services, which I know was a question that I had a little bit earlier. And it's not that we can't do Windows services, it's the startup model around Windows services that makes it a little bit trickier. So IntelliTrace is implemented as a CLR profiler, which means we need to be there at the startup process. So we have to start something up for us to be able to be there to collect our data. Process ends, we go away. With a Windows service, we don't want to go and restart your NT service without some real explicit, you know, okay, that's fine by me, from you. So those ones are a little tricky because of the start-stop model behind a Windows services. With IIS, it's not so bad because we've got the recycle in there, so your application can still run and still serve requests as we're doing that recycle. Something to be aware of, though. We need to be there at the start. Desktop applications, basically, you launch a new instance of the application, we can be there, we can collect all the stuff, stop the application, we go away. All right. What data is collected? I'm going to dive into all of this stuff much deeper when we start looking at applications, and I promise I don't have a lot of slides, because I don't like slides. Most of the time, I'm going to be actually showing you bits and show you how we work. is it a bootstrapper? No, it, well, the desktop collection kind of is. The IIS is not. And what we need to do is there are certain environment variables that we need to configure and get in place for the process that we're going to instrument so that the CLR, when it loads up, knows to load our profiler. And once the once all of that is set up and the process starts and the CLR loads up, it says, oh, you got a profiler, let's load that in, let's do whatever it does, and then shut down. With the desktop application, we do that in a process that we create that then loads your application, so it's actually not affecting the environment variables on the machine at all. And with IIS, we're very isolated to the application pool. And when you stop collection, we go away. All of this is X-copyable, so there is no installer. So if you actually want to put it on a server box, you X-copy us over. We've got some PowerShell to do IIS. And when you stop, delete us, we're gone. So we're very, very low impact, very clean. I'm going to wander over to the other side, talk to these people. Okay, so what I've got up on the screen here is just a little snapshot from the general settings within Visual Studio. If you go into Tools, Options, and IntelliTrace, this is kind of the main thing that you'll see. By default, we're set up for IntelliTrace events only. The other option is IntelliTrace events and call information. And what you see here is you're always getting these IntelliTrace events, whatever those are, right? And then you can also get calls information, whatever that is, right? So events are specific IntelliTrace data points where we collect targeted information on very specific framework methods. And what we've done is we've tried to go, what's going to be important to you guys? What information do you want to know that we can then surface to help you debug your applications? One of the really big winners that we found was ADO.NET events. And where this really shines is if you're using Link and Entity Framework. Who's doing that? Anybody? Link, EF? Okay, so a bunch. So hopefully what I can do is I can really help you understand what are those queries that are being executed, right? So you write some link on top of EF, and then you kind of go, well, I'm pretty sure it's going to retrieve this from the database. Depending on the complexity of your link statement, right, knowing what it's actually querying can be kind of tricky. With, yeah, so you can use SQL tracing, but with IntelliTrace, which is on by default, what we do is we're going to gather the SQL query that was executed, as well as the connection string that was used to connect to that database. So you can actually see what exactly did that link over EF translate into as far as the SQL statement goes. I'll show you that. That's fairly easy. That's the kind of stuff that I want to show you, things that aren't real easy to kind of grok as you're debugging your code and trying to figure out what's going on. So that's my real big winning example. IntelliTrace events and call information. So call information here is we are recording every method call and every method return in target assemblies or modules. We refer to them as modules in the option settings. And when I say we record all of those, what we're doing is we're going to record a subset of the data for the parameters passed into every method, as well as a subset of the data returned from every method call in the target modules. Now, that target modules is really key. By default, what we do is we sort of say, yeah, don't do that for anything from Microsoft, because what are you going to do about it? Well, maybe there is something you can do about it, and you can turn that off if you like and include Microsoft modules. But by excluding those, really what we're trying to focus on is your code. Now, that also means if you have any third-party products, and we've seen lots of vendors at the show here that are providing lots of widgets that you can use, we're going to collect from their modules as well. You may want to exclude those. Now, another option is you can be very explicit about which modules you want to include for collection instead. Now, that's a better way to go. These are not necessarily the most intuitive interfaces we've got going here. We really focused on how we actually do the collection instead of making it usable. Apologize for that. But I'll show you how you can really say, I want to collect from just these four modules of mine so that I can get my information. And don't clutter it with anybody else's information that I can't do anything about. Now, we're still going to collect things like that ADO.net event that are in the framework, because that's all going to happen by magic. And those are very, very targeted. And they run reasonably fast. It's the calls information that can start to run a little bit slow. So let me... Oh, I didn't keep my nice formatting. Let me drill into an example on the data that we collect. So here's an example class. And this class is taken from the FiberCam Fiber web application. So if anybody goes and downloads Brian Keller's VM for Visual Studio 2012, comes preloaded with some web applications, this is taken from that web application. So I don't want to show you anything that you don't actually have access to and can play around with. So it's a fairly straightforward class. You can see it's got a whole bunch of automatic properties. So we've got first name, last name, address, right? And they're just automatic properties with the getters and the setters. It's got one method in there to get the full name. Now, when we instrument and we collect method information, something you have to understand is we're doing this at the IL level, not at the code level. Now, when you look at what firstname.get looks like in IL, it's a method. So is the set, right? So properties are all methods. I don't distinguish between those. So when I'm collecting from your assembly, I'm going to collect every time a property gets set or accessed. So whenever you go and you touch your object and you say, oh, I need to set first name to Larry, or get me the first name of this employee object, I'm going to record that. And I'm going to record what those values are. Now, when it comes to things like address, address up here is a richer object, right? It's not a primitive. My first name is a string, and I've got ints for IDs and things like that. So there's a very distinct difference between what I collect for primitives and what I collect for child objects. Let me just show this on the next slide. So let's say you've got a method that looks like this. So it's a nice simple find method. I'm passing in an ID, and I expect to get back the employee that matches that ID. When that method executes, and you've got a trail trace including calls information, I'm going to collect a bunch of stuff. So my primary object, my employee object here, has an ID, first name, last name, identity, and service areas. That's just taken from the class that we saw before. All of those are primitives. I'm going to capture the values of those fields. So when that employee object returns, I can tell you what those values were. The employee object also has two child objects, an address and a collection of phone numbers. Now these are rich objects. I'm not going to do much collection for you there. So what I've got is I've got pointers to those. I'm going to collect whether the pointer existed or not. So what I'll be able to tell you is, oh, that address was null, because I'll just say null. Or the collection of phone numbers existed. And what we do is we just put this really obscure entry into your locals window that says unknown, which means it was there. I just don't know what it was. So that's basically the stuff that we're going to collect. And when you go and look at the return from the find method, in your locals window, you're going to see all of this sort of information. Hopefully that's readable. It should be reasonably readable. And what you'll see for the address field there is I'm showing you that unknown, which means there is an address object at the end of that pointer. If we take a look at phone, you can see it's null. There was no object at the end of that pointer. So no phone numbers got returned. The reason we do that is if we start to drill down into all of the child objects, collection can get really intense. And we can collect a ton of data. If anybody of you went and saw Victor's presentation with System Center, and he was showing IntelliTrace collection that we've now enabled in System Center, so you can start and stop it from within there. One of the comments that we had was, wow, when you did IntelliTrace collection, the data file that came back was 23 meg. That's nothing. We can exceed 23 meg in no time at all. We ran some performance testing, and what we were doing is we were collecting on a very large application under extreme load, a gigabyte of data a minute. So it's big. We have settings where you can say only make the file so large. So if you cap us to 100 meg, we'll start rolling. Old stuff gets dropped off, new stuff gets written in. Depending on your load, depending on what you're doing, like I said, the data can be fairly intense. You might only want to run it for a very short period of time while you're collecting the data around the problem. Turn it off, grab it, and pull it back. The other thing that we would collect here that I didn't actually call out on the slide is I'd also collect the value of the ID that's passed into the method. And if an employee object had been passed into the method, the same would work, just as if it had been returned. Okay, that's the end of my slides. So what I've got up here is this is the Fabricam Fiber application. I've made a few tweaks on it just to make it a little bit more interesting. This is the one that comes with the VM that Brian Keller provides. You can go and download it for Visual Studio 2012. This is a slightly older version, so he may have made some enhancements. I don't know. What you might notice here is I don't have the fancy new logo on my instance of Visual Studio. What I'm running is a bit of a Frankenstein version of Visual Studio, because what I want to show you guys a little bit later is some of the stuff that we're working on that we actually want to push out post-RTM. So it's going to come out in that first feature pack that Jason Zander mentioned in his blog a while back. One of the things that we're really committed to is delivering incremental value. So you're going to get a sneak peek at some of the stuff that's coming up, which is why I've got this kind of funky version. I don't have all of the right logos. The new logo appears in some places, not in others. But the core bits of IntelliTrace that I'll show you today are all available with the RC. Okay, so first thing I want to do is I'm just going to hit F5 so you can see what the F5 experience is. And this is an interesting... Am I doing something? No, I'm not doing anything here. Oh, yeah, I am. Okay. I apologize. My laptop is not... You know, these great big beefy boxes that everybody, I just have a little laptop, so it takes a little bit of time. What I've heard from the crowd is there's quite a few people here that just saw IntelliTrace for the very first time this week. So there's a bit of level setting that I want to do. So I say advanced. I'm definitely going to be diving deep into a bunch of stuff, but I want to make sure that everybody kind of has a glimpse of what IntelliTrace is all about at the basic level. Now, when I press F5 and I start debugging, everything that I'm showing you here in F5 is available with the 2010 version. So if you're running 2010, Ultimate Edition, you've got this already. So here's my Fabricam web app, and I'm just going to click on a few different things here so that I can build up some interesting data. I got my tickets. I've got my customers. I've got some employees. And I've got this reports, and I know there's a bug in here, which is kind of why I like to hit this one. Within Visual Studio, default behavior, break on an exception, right? So I'm now in debugger mode. And what you're seeing, let's just get rid of this, is off to the side, on the right-hand side here, is my IntelliTrace window. I expect a lot of people have seen this and went, what the heck is that thing? I don't understand what's going on there. I'm just going to make it go away because it's confusing me. And I hear that a lot. We've got a lot of data that we're collecting that we hope is going to be helpful, but sifting through it can sometimes be a little bit tricky. One of the things that isn't real obvious are we've got these categories that are available here, and these are the exact same categories that you're going to see in Tools Options. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to uncheck that, and I'm going to enable ASP.NET and ADO.NET. It's a slightly more concise view. I can get rid of some of the noise that's going on. So this can help you understand. This is all collected in order as I was using the application. So as you can see, the first thing that I did was I hit just the default website. Bunch of ADO.NET got executed. We can see a request for service tickets, some ADO.NET. Well, let's hover off of that. Another get request, some more ADO.NET. If I hover over these ADO.NETs, there's the SQL that was executed. This entire application was written using Link on top of Entity Framework. But if you want to know, well, what did that translate before it hit the database? That's what it translated into. So I give you lots of valuable information. One of the things you can do now is I can click on that. It'll keep it open so I can inspect the actual statement, and it's going to take me to the place in code where that query was executed. Now, another thing when you're using things like link is you've got the delayed execution, right? That link query isn't going to execute until you access the data for the very first time, which can also be something that's a real pain to debug, because as soon as you hover over it, it executes the query, which isn't necessarily where that query is going to execute when you're running the application. So using IntelliTrace, you can actually go and see when the query was executed, as well as what the query was. And where the query was executed isn't necessarily anywhere close to where you actually defined the link statement, right? And anybody that's done link in Entity Framework is familiar with that, especially as you try and debug it, right? Because then you're executing the query, and but it doesn't actually get executed there when I'm running the application, and things are all out of sync now, and it breaks, but it's not because of what you're thinking it should be breaking on. So what we can see here is this ADO.NET statement was executed in the CSHTML file, right? So I create this link statement, I create this model, I pass it on through my controller to my view. The view then accesses the data and starts iterating over the data. That's when the ADO.NET statement was executed. So that can be helpful information, as well as the query that was done. And what you'll see when I'm in here now, I've got this funny little glyph. And this margin that this glyph is on is the IntelliTrace margin. It's ours. It's special to us. I get to own it. I get to do things in it. Nobody else gets to play there. If you click on it, actually, let me back up a second. This funky glyph means that I've got IntelliTrace recording at this point in time. So as you see them, you'll kind of understand what those mean. If I click on it, what I'm doing now is I'm setting the debugger context to that line of code. I am now in what we call historical debugging mode. I'm not in your typical Visual Studio debugging mode. The context has shifted. I'm now behind where the code actually broke. This happened in the past. This can be a little bit weird. It looks like we're still debugging, and we kind of are, but we're kind of not. So this takes a little bit of getting used to. You're only going to see this margin and these navigation controls if you're recording with calls information. You won't see this if you're only recording with events information. Because like I said, events are very targeted. Gather me this information. Everything that you're seeing in this list over here, those are my IntelliTrace events. So when I talk about IntelliTrace events, that's them. And we're going to gather those regardless. But in here, when I start to navigate around, I'm getting this ability because I had calls enabled, where I'm instrumenting all of those different methods. And really what you want to do is you want to keep your locals window open. Have that pinned whenever you're navigating IntelliTrace log that was collected with high, because that's where we push the information down to. Now, since we're in historical mode, what we're doing is we're actually reading all of this information from the IntelliTrace log that was collected. Now, if you're collecting IntelliTrace in production, you've got this IntelliTrace log that you then bring back and you open up in Visual Studio, it's the same experience. I don't have the entire state of memory at every point in time of when your application was running. I mean, you can just imagine the size that log would be. What I do have is I have a hydrated version of what happened when that method was called, at the depth of data as I showed you on that previous slide. Right, so anything that was passed into a method, I'll collect primitives on the top-level objects and whether the pointer existed for child objects. For return values, same thing. So if we actually take a look at the line of code that I'm sitting on, it's very context-dependent. I only know about this particular line of code because when it executed, I recorded a bunch of stuff. Then we went to the next line of code. When it executed, I recorded a bunch of stuff. I don't know anything about lines of code behind me. I don't know anything about lines of code ahead of me until I get there. So you need to be moving the context to really understand what happened there. So in here, we can actually see I collected some information about this ID. And this is the call to serviceTicket.id. I'm going to just step down into a few different methods here, and you can see it can sometimes take a while to get there, because what's happening is there's a whole lot of framework code that's being executed underneath the covers here. Since this is where my ADO.NET was actually executed, I'm going through the entire framework ADO.NET stack, and every time I'm hitting that little down arrow to go to the next call, I'm actually navigating the call stack for framework code, which is why when I'm clicking there, nothing happened. And you're going, oh, it's broken. I'm clicking, nothing's happening, hello. Right? Well, this is where I can switch over to the calls view. And this is kind of scary stuff. I don't like going here. I don't expect you guys to go here. Sometimes it can be helpful. Sometimes not so much, because when you look at the call tree, and I'm talking about the call stack, right? I'm talking about the call tree for an ADO.NET web page call, it's massive. Right? Stuff calls down, and then it comes back up, and it calls down, and it comes back up, and it calls down, and it goes off. Right? And there's all of this framework goo that's going on that you don't care about. So to try and sift through that call tree to find the things that you're interested in can be really tricky. We give you the data, so you can look at it if you want. It's kind of nasty and dangerous and all of that. But as you can see, when I start to navigate here, what I'm doing is I'm actually navigating this call tree. I can step into any of these methods and drill down a little bit deeper. And if there's no code that was recorded under it, I'm just going to go on to the next one. So this is kind of crazy. But what you can also see here, when you're looking at the entire call tree, I'm going to show you the method calls and the data that was passed into it right in line there. So you can actually see a whole bunch of the values that we recorded there. It's tons of information. Okay. The other thing that can get you into a little bit of trouble, if you click continue, I didn't bounce you back to the app, which is what everybody expects. That's the same as if I pressed F5, right? My app is running, I hit a breakpoint, I press F5, and I'm back into the app. If you've gone into historical mode, which isn't the most intuitive thing to understand when you're there, but when you're in historical mode and you press F5, what I'll do is I'll get you back to where the debugger broke. So I'm now out of historical mode and I'm into traditional debugger context. If I press F5 again, oops, that was F6. It's kind of dark up here. If I press F5 again, you'll see that I'm back into my app. So it's kind of two F5s. Once you've got into historical mode, it's get out of historical mode. Now that I'm back in the debugger context, let's get back to my app. That stuff can be a little bit confusing. All right. So I'm just going to stop that because I've got a ton of stuff that I still want to cover. Okay, so that is a real quick introduction to the F5 experience. Now let me just dive a bit into tools options. All right, so there's a bunch of different ways to get here, right? That the quick search thing is the easiest way, otherwise it's tools options. Scroll all the way down to IntelliTrace, expand it out. There's the basic settings that I showed you, right? So if I was only on events only, I wouldn't be able to navigate my code. I wouldn't be able to see the values of parameters that were passed to my methods or the return values. All I would get is those IntelliTrace events. Depending on the information that you're looking for, that may very well be enough. One of the things that we capture, in addition to all of those event types, event categories that we saw there, were exceptions. We will always capture every exception that was thrown and every exception that was caught while this application was running. Now, this can be tricky when you start to look at the exceptions because particularly with a web application, you've got this ASP.NET framework that's doing a whole ton of stuff for you. One of them is some error trapping. So if I've got a null reference, which I'll show you because I've got that example set up here, that null reference is going to get thrown and it's going to get caught by the framework. The framework's got a point where it's going to catch your exceptions, see if it's something that it can do something with because maybe it's one of their own. And then it's going to rethrow it. And then there's a second point where the framework's going to catch it, see if there's something that it can do with it because maybe it's something of their own. And if not, it's going to throw it again. And then there's that global catch, right? All ASP.NET. So in essence, there is no such thing as an uncaught exception in a web app. because ASP.NET at the highest level will catch all exceptions and then display the yellow screen of death. So you'll never have an uncaught exception in a web app. But for an exception that was thrown, typically what you'll see is you'll see it three times when you're looking at an IntelliTrace log, or six times, kind of depending on your perspective, throw, catch, throw, catch, throw, catch. Something that you're not interested in is where it was strictly within the framework. You're really interested in where it occurred in your code. And I'll show you how you can really drill down into that. So we covered that. We've got some advanced stuff here. One of the things that we heard an awful lot when we released Visual Studio 2010 is, wow, is IntelliTrace ever chewing up my hard drive space? Remember how big I said these files can get? Yeah. So what we did with Service Pack 1 for Visual Studio 2010, please, everybody, tell me you're using Service Pack 1. Who's using Service Pack 1? Everybody, everybody, no, everybody put up your hand, please. Okay. What we did is we changed it so that we're not storing them and keeping on your hard drive forever. We store them temporarily. As soon as you're done debugging, close Visual Studio, we get rid of them and we clean them up. Unless you check that top checkbox and say, no, 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 hang on to them, I'm going to take care of cleanup myself. So every couple of weeks, there's a tweet, oh, IntelliTrace, it's chewing up my hard drive, right? And people say, I've got 40 gigs used up for IntelliTrace. And so I always reply, you know, upgrade to Service Pack 1, don't check that, and if you do, go and clean it up every once in a while. All right, there's the maximum size, right? You can change that to, we have a few different options, right? Let's go 20 gig, here be dragons. I hope you have a really big hard drive. IntelliTrace events, these are the general categories, right? So when I went to that drop-down, when I was looking at the IntelliTrace list there, what you saw were the categories. So these are the same categories. In tools options, you can actually get a little bit more granular and you can say, okay, I only want to capture information about these particular events. The fewer events that we're recording, the faster IntelliTrace will be. One of the things that we did when we were very first building this thing out in Visual Studio 2010 is we had registry stuff turned on by default. Well, since all of this is instrumented in framework code, because this is the only code that I know about when I build this stuff, you wouldn't believe how often an ASP.NET web app hits the registry. It's insane. So we turned that off because your logs got filled up real fast. If you are doing things with the registry, you may want to turn this on. But be warned, the framework hits the registry like crazy, so you have to sort of sift through what's going on there. I'll show you how to sift through a little bit later as well. And then the last one that we have here is modules. We didn't do a very good job about explaining this. Modules only applies when you're collecting calls information. It has nothing to do with events at all. I don't tell you that here. It's a secret. I want you guys to, you know, experiment a little bit. These are the whole, let's not collect anything from Microsoft, because you don't care. Well, I hope you don't care. I mean, maybe you do care. So we got a bunch of our public key tokens listed in there. So anything that's been signed with those keys, don't collect from those. And then the very last one is anything that has Microsoft dot in the assembly name, exclude that. So if you happen to have created a module and you've given it an assembly name of Microsoft.FabriCamFiber, a bunch of stuff for the Microsoft framework that I need to do, .dll, I'm going to exclude that. I'm hoping nobody actually starts their assembly names with Microsoft dot. Now, the other option is you can say collect data only from. Now, we did a bad job here by not clearing this list. So what I just did was say only collect data from the Microsoft stuff. That's just dumb. What you need to do is when you switch to that, you want to delete all of that, because that's going to be useless, and put in your modules. Now, you can be really explicit, or you can get a little bit wildcardy. We don't really support wildcards, but if I'm the FabriCam Fiber company, and all of my assemblies have FabriCam Fiber in the name, I could put FabriCam Fiber. And then what it's going to do is it will collect data from any modules in the running application that are named FabricM Fiber. And this is the file name of the assembly. It's not namespaces. So this is strictly file name, and it's just a simple string match. So it's real easy. If you want to get explicit, you could put in your full module name, and then it will collect only from that specific module, and you can get as granular as you want. Now, all of this applies when you're doing collection from production or anywhere else for that matter. So if you know that the problem that you're experiencing is in this one particular module, put just that module in the modules list and then run collection, and we will run faster because we're not collecting nearly as much data from other assemblies, and it can be very, very targeted. So it'll get your information. So that's one of the tips on how do I make this thing run as efficiently as possible when I'm trying to collect against some environment where I don't want to degrade performance any more than I absolutely have to. Okay, so that's our tools options. Absolutely.
On that screen that just went up,
yep.
If I deleted out the Microsoft one,
yes.
And added my specific one and wanted to go back to the Microsoft one, is it just going to exclude my list since it has that quirkiness?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So the question was, I've just flipped to only collect from these modules. I've typed in FabricM Fiber because I only want to collect from my modules. I'm done with that. And now I'm going to go on to another app. So I want to collect from everything. So I flip it back to exclude these modules. And I don't do anything else. And I press F5. Am I going to exclude my module? Yes, you are. And you'll collect from everything else. So you then have to go and put the Microsoft ones back in place and take yours out. And we've got a reset button there. So you don't actually have to remember, what were those keys again? Yeah, I have no idea what those keys are. Okay, I'm actually not checking to see, you know, my email here. I'm going to see what kind of messages that I've got. All right, so don't screw up the presentation. Oh, that's from my boss. Never mind. All right, what do we got here? How do you debug dynamic CRM plugins? One of the things that really, really doesn't matter to us is the application at all, right? What matters is we have to be there at process start. Unfortunately, I know next to nothing about dynamic CRM other than we make it. We have to be there at process start. Now, the other thing that's interesting is it doesn't matter if this is a native app or a managed app. We only work on managed code, by the way, 2.0 and greater. We require .NET 3.5 to be on the machine for collection because IntelliTrace relies on some of the 3.5 capabilities, but your app has to be 2.0 or greater. In a sense, the managed portion of your app has to be 2.0 or greater. You can be a native application. We work against Word. So I'll use Word as an example to maybe answer the CRM question. If you've built a plugin for Word using managed code, you can turn on IntelliTrace desktop collection using the command line, and that's all documented on MSDN, and say target Word, and then Word will run. And when it goes to load your managed plugin, it spins up the CLR. When the CLR loads, it checks for the IntelliTrace profiler environment variables. It will find them if you started us using the command line capabilities. It will load IntelliTrace, and we will record IntelliTrace data for the managed code portions of your application. So hopefully that helps. The other thing that we've got is IIS integration, so we can do application pools. So if it's a web app, same thing. Turn us on, we will recycle the application pool so that we're there for the start of the new requests that are being handled, and we'll record all of the managed stuff that goes on in there. Object not set to an instance of an object, but not every time run. Okay, so what we're talking about here is we've got some exceptions that occur intermittently. You can run us as long as you want. The trick is we get fairly big, fairly fast, depending on what you're instrumenting, how many people are hitting the site, how much code is being executed, right? If something happens only intermittently, what you really want to do is you want to know when it happens so that you can stop collection at that point before that exception gets to the tail end of the log and we start dropping off, because it might not be there if you come back a day later. Grab it then, and I'll show you how we can filter and really get to that interesting information. Can I do this on VS 2010 apps? Okay, what I said, right? .NET 2 or greater. So it doesn't matter. You could have built this with, you know, the command line compiler. We are not dependent on Visual Studio at all, other than when you actually want to do the analysis of the log. But for collection, we have no dependencies on what was used to build this application or anything, as long as it's the .NET 2.0 or greater. Fixed debugging deeply nested recursion methods to be tedious and difficult at times, but definitely tedious. Can Teletrace help with that? Nested recursion methods can be tricky. We will record all of that, and we can show that, and I'll show you some of the searching that we can do for methods. But those can be one of the real pain points, not only for your application and what's going on, but also with IntelliTrace, because if you have a tight loop or a tight recursion that spins a lot, and you're instrumenting that particular method, if you hit a method that's being called 10,000 times, we're going to record all of that data 10,000 times, and at that point, we're going to be really slow. One of the things that we did as we're playing around with this, right, we loaded up an application that we pulled off of CodeBlocks. It was a WPF app. It loaded up. We pressed the button. We went for coffee. We came back, and finally the button had stopped. Well, this was because IntelliTrace high calls, same thing, was running. And we were really, 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 really slow. Now, we dug into that to find out how come IntelliTrace was so slow. Yeah, we've got an impact because of the data that we're collecting, but this was outrageous. Well, when we started looking at the code, there was one particular method within this application that was called 750,000 times on one button click. Every time that method was called, we recorded the value of the parameters that were passed into it and the return value coming out of it. So I kind of go, yeah, we're crazy slow. If we are insanely crazy slow, maybe there's something going on in your application that you can change. Now, what I don't have is a great way to find that right now, but that is definitely something that we're interested in surfacing, so that when you go and you turn it on and 20 minutes later you come back and it's still chugging away, I want to help you understand why. Okay, so we think there's a lot of value that we can add in lots of different places. Okay, yeah, the texts are just flying in here. Can you do this in Azure? Yes. So that was available in Visual Studio 2010. They have IntelliTrace available in Azure, which is really, if you're doing Azure development, you need Visual Studio Ultimate and get IntelliTrace, because we've got it there. I wanted to run this in prod web farm. Okay, so right now we are single process only. We don't support a farm environment, other than the fact that you could deploy us on all of your machines, and then you'd get a whole bunch of individual logs back, and we don't have a good correlation across them. That's a scenario that we really want to hear more about, and we really want to understand how we can help provide that capability. Because the trick is, how do we say, okay, it was running here, and it was running here, and it was running here. How do I know it was the same request that actually spanned multiple servers? How do I do a correlation across those? I think there's going to be a lot of different answers to that depending on our customers. So that's something that we're definitely pursuing, and we want to figure out how to do that in a really meaningful way. So no, not today, other than, yeah, as individual things. If it calls a stored procedure, does it collect any? No, it does not. We don't collect anything about stored procedures other than you call the stored procedure. We would know the stored procedure name and the connection string that was used. One of the things that we're really thinking about adding in is a separate IntelliTrace event that will actually also capture the parameter values that are passed, because we don't collect that today, so that you can turn that on separately. One of the concerns that we've had is, yeah, my devs can't actually know anything about the data, right? You may have PII information, social security, credit card information, and that cannot get back to the devs, which is why today we don't collect that information. I think adding in a second event where we do, and you can turn it on or off, might sort of help alleviate some of that. All right, how does the modules list get deployed to production? All right, so let me I'm going to pause there. There's tons of methods here, or messages here. And let me talk about production. So I talked about this cab file that you can download. And let me just... I've got this link here. Hopefully it's been updated. Oh, it still says beta. Doesn't matter. I don't think we really changed much between beta and RC. So do a Bing for IntelliTrace Standalone Collector. You'll get this. You'll get our help docs. It's got lots of information. How do you use it? How do you use the command line? All of the information is there. You can download this. Like I said, anybody can download this. You do not need a Visual Studio license. You don't need a license to anything. Anybody in the world can download this. Grab it. And what you'll end up with is a cab file on your disk. You will also get the exact same cab file that gets dropped when you install Visual Studio. It gets dropped into this crazy location that doesn't even fit. Still doesn't fit. It's buried way deep. Right, so there we go. So follow that path. Nice and intuitive, right? You don't need to remember that. And you'll find this IntelliTrace collection.cab file. This is the exact same one that you download for free. Okay? The difference might be is as we get those feature pack releases, we'll be updating the one on the website. So the one on the website will always be the most current. The one that you will have here will match up to whatever is the latest feature pack that you've installed on Visual Studio. So you may have a bit of a disconnect if you download the one, do some collection in production, bring it back to Visual Studio. You might be a little bit out of sync between versions. We are doing our absolute level best to provide both forward and backward compatibility between the logs that are collected. As we release new versions, naturally what we want to do is we want to put more information into these logs that get collected. So when you open up a new log in a slightly older version of Visual Studio, you'll still get all of the experience that you would have if you had collected with an older version. You'll just be missing out on some of that new data that we may have collected until you upgrade Visual Studio to match the version. But it should all work forward and backwards compatibility, which is no simple feat. So once you've got this cab file, let me just grab this. And I'm going to just create a new folder here and show you what you need to do. Folder. And I'm going to paste it in there. Once you've got it local, you need to expand it. Now, you cannot right-click on it in Windows Explorer and say expand, even though it will let you do that. Don't, because unfortunately, when you expand a cab file using the Windows Explorer, it does not preserve folder hierarchy, and it'll take all of our files and drop them into one single folder, and we don't work. So after you've done this, if you look at it and there's no subfolders in where you've expanded it, just delete all of that, and you have to do this expand. And we have this documented in the instructions. And it's just... So that's the command line. It's not the most intuitive, but that's unfortunately the way that it works. So it's expand /f *. Don't do *.*, just *, because we've got some files that don't actually have an extension on them, and they won't get extracted. I'm not happy about this, but it's kind of, we work in certain constraints that are given to us, right? Do this. Well, there's all of our stuff, right? And you'll see that we've got 126 files. There's a whole pile of subfolders. What we're shipping is all languages in one package. So you'll see we have all of the different languages that you want. This is fully localized. Okay. So now that I've got that, what I need to do is I need to import the module. And this is just our PowerShell module. So this is one of the files that will get extracted. This is one that you need to import into PowerShell. Now that it's imported, I can do things like start IntelliTrace collection. And I basically have five commands. There's really only three that you're probably going to be interested in: start collection, stop collection, and snapshot. And what snapshot does is it leaves IntelliTrace collecting, and it'll take a snapshot of the log, so you can grab that log, and you can go off and work with it. You cannot just grab the log that's being collected, because we've got it locked while we're collecting. So either you have to stop or snapshot if you want to go and use it. Is PowerShell required to do this? PowerShell is required for the IIS instrumentation, not for the client instrumentation. So it's only for the IIS. And we went with PowerShell because we heard, you know, every admin out there wants everything in PowerShell so that they can start and do a whole bunch of scripting around all of this. So that's why it's in PowerShell. No other reason for that. Okay, so what the heck is start and stop actually doing? Okay, there's more to it than just this. So next thing I need to do is give it the app pool. So what application pool do I actually want to instrument? So we're application pool specific, and you can have this running on multiple different application pools independently. The next thing I need to do is give it a collection plan. We provide two of them out of the box, right? So there's this collectionplan.asp.net.default.xml. We wanted to make it very readable and easily typed. The other one is the exact same thing with trace. The difference between the two of them is basically those options that you saw for IntelliTrace under tools options, the very first kind of slide that I was showing there, right? One is the default settings where it's just events. The trace includes the calls. So that's your calls trace. And then the last thing I need to do is say, where do I want to drop my log? And I haven't actually created that file yet, so let me do that. We're here. So I'm going to create a new folder. We're going to call it logs. Now what I need to do, whoops, I didn't mean to go into it. What I need to do is I need to make sure that this folder can be written to by the identity that's running the application pool. So the application pool needs to be able to create the log, write the log, read the log, all of that. So the next thing that you have to do is give it permissions. So I'm going to come in here and I'm going to add my app pool identity. And it's chugging away and it's not responding. This is where I do a little song and dance. So while it's not responding, let's go. Oh, see, there's an advantage to having people text me questions. Right, so the question here was, I didn't say anything about whether this was IIS or desktop. PowerShell is only for IIS. When you look in the expanded files, there's an .exe called IntelliTrace SC for standalone collector, .exe. You use that command line for client applications. If you go to the download page, there's a link to the documentation on how to use all of this sort of stuff. So the expand command, everything that I showed you is all on the documentation page, as well as the exact command line syntax for using the command line. Okay. This is just way cool. Thanks for the aha. That's from my wife. How can you check IntelliTrace taken from production in a dev environment? How can you check IntelliTrace taken from? I don't understand the question. How can you check IntelliTrace taken from production in a dev environment? I believe the question is, now that I've done this in production, how do I use this with my tools? And I'll get to that. So what I want to do now is it just IIS app pool default app pool. Thank you. And of course, this is from my local machine and not the Microsoft corporate domain, because I'm pretty sure I don't have permissions to do that. That's probably what's taking this so long. It's probably trying to find all my domain stuff. Okay, and I just want to check our time. So I don't have a whole lot of time. So what I'm probably going to do is I'm going to skip ahead. I do this. I set up the collection. I collect a log. I stop collection. Stop collection is pretty much the same thing. I say stop collection, stop dash IntelliTrace collection, give it the application pool that I want to stop on, and then I've got a log. And I'm just going to cancel this if I can. And I want to move to showing you what the logs look like. So I'm going to open up one that I collected before. And you'll see, double-click on it, I'm spinning up a brand new instance of Visual Studio. This is kind of important, and I'll show you why in a bit. This is what you're looking at. So this is what we call our summary page. This is going to get enhancements all the time. So these are one of the bits that we're going to be revving. If I take a look at, it's trying to connect to my corporate TFS. That's great. Take a look at the exceptions. Right. So here are all the exceptions that occurred. Basically, what I collected here was I went to that Fabrikam Fiber application. I went to the reports where we saw that exception earlier when I was F5 debugging. And I just ran that and I collected that. And what comes up is a, you know, we're sorry you ran into an error, right? I don't show the yellow screen of death. I've got something in the global.asax to handle those global exceptions, right? So my users don't see anything bad. And what I've got here is I've got a whole pile of exceptions. Now, if you're familiar with ASP.NET web development, you'll probably recognize the top few thread abort exception. Those are pretty typical. You get those if you're doing like a server.transfer or something like that. ASP.NET framework will transfer the request and it will do a thread.abort. No big deal. Don't care about those. Right? Those are irrelevant. Those are to be expected. Maybe. You can safely ignore them. You know that you are getting some other kind of exception. Now, what's interesting, too, is you can take a look at things like this runtime binder exception. And if you take a look at the call stack, you can see there's nothing but framework code on the call stack. So you're thinking, oh, there's nothing I can do about this. It's those wacky guys at Microsoft are doing stupid things. Well, that might be the case. But if you take a look at the message, and if you drill into the code to see where this was thrown, there was an object passed into a, there was a property on a web page, and it was trying to bind to a value taken out of a property bag. And that value did not exist in the property bag. So this is actually code that was written by the developer. But since that value in the property bag could not be found, we get this binder exception, but it will not crash your application. These are one of those exception types that the framework catches and goes, this is, I don't want to say it's trivial, but it's nothing that we should pull down the application due to. If you take a look at this, you find out where that was actually happening, you can go and fix that. So you won't get these exceptions. Exceptions are slow. So even just run IntelliTrace on an application, open it up, see what was going on. We've done that with a bunch of internal applications, and we found, geez, there's this whole pile of exceptions that were thrown and caught. We did this on some of the TFS service stuff before it went live, and we found there's one particular exception that kept getting thrown. And they were catching it, and they were handling it, and everything was working fine. But if they prevented that exception from being thrown, it's going to increase the performance of the application. So you can use this as just guidance on what's going on within your application. Yeah. Now, the one that I'm really interested in is this null reference exception. So, like I said before, throw, catch, throw, catch, throw, catch. This was a null reference in my code. Bad things happened. And if I take a look at the call stack, you can see on the call stack there is no Fabrikam Fiber code on the call stack. This all happened in framework. Okay, not that interested. Let's go and take a look at the next one. Null reference, again, nothing but framework code. And if I take a look at the last one, you can see that the top of the stack there is Fabrikam Fiber. That's the one I'm interested in. Good indication that this is all the same exception is the fact that it was all, they're all thrown one right after the other, and they're all on the same thread. So you can use the information in here to kind of deduce that, yeah, okay, these three exceptions are really the same exception. Unfortunately, we're not doing a nice data analysis yet, and this is all stuff that's coming, right? Because really we wanted to get the foundational core built and ready, and we'll add better analysis as we go along. So now I can take this, and I can either double-click on it, or I can just start debugging. But what I want to show you is I want to show you the web requests. So here's another view of how you can start to analyze what's going on. So customers are saying, you know, I'm going to this reports page. It used to work. Now it's not working. Well, in my dev environment, right, it works fine. So I don't see any problems. It's all going according to plan. Well, what I can do is I can drill down into specific pages that were requested. So if I know the page that the customer was hitting where I was having the problems, I can start to focus on that. So I know the structure of my application. I know I've got this reports page, which is hosting two other pages, which are making requests into my server. And the one that I'm having the problems with is that employees report. So I can take a look at the employees report. And you'll see I'm giving you a lot of the same information that you get from your standard IIS logs. So we give you a bunch of that. You don't need to go and scrape your IIS logs as well. I can take a look at these request details. And what we've done here is all of those IntelliTrace events that we show you, which was that great big huge long list that you saw in Visual Studio when I hit my breakpoint, is I've scoped them to the IntelliTrace events that occurred as part of this web request. So now you can really see, well, what happened when somebody made that request into the server? And you can see there are a bunch of ADO.NET calls that were made. So we hit the database a bunch of times. There was an XML document that got loaded. And as you know, with ASP.NET, there's tons of XML documents all over the place, right? All those config files. And I'm not scrolling. But you can also see here's my, there we go, a little slow. Here are my exceptions. It seems to be really slow. And I can start debugging from any of these IntelliTrace events as well. So I can see the database calls that were made, and then I see my null reference exception. So there's a good chance that they may be tied together. So I can start to infer possibly some of the things that went on. Let's see if this is going to speed up for me. Nope, it's not. If I start debugging right now, how does it find the right version of the source code? Well, that kind of depends on you. What we do, when IntelliTrace collects data, we're instrumenting your binaries. We're scraping a bunch of information out of those modules. Some of the information that we have is where this was built and information about the associated symbol files. Who here stores and manages their symbol files? Not enough of you. Okay? Everybody should be raising it. It's the same question as with who's got Service Pack 1, right? Everybody raises their hand and does that, okay? Symbol files are the key to all of this magic. When we scrape the metadata out of the assemblies and you load this up and you click start debugging, what I want to do is I want to take you to the line of code that caused your problem so that you can then start investigating it. I'm going to look for those symbols from wherever they were built. So if this was built on a server, your build server, I'm going to try and look there if I have access to that path. And you can set that in Visual Studio, and hopefully I'll have time to show you that real quick. And then once I've loaded the symbol files contain information depending on how your build was structured. You don't need to use TFS. I'll use TFS as the example because, well, we make it. When you define a build within TFS, one of the things that you can check off is source indexing. It's a checkbox. Check it off. Please. It goes along with symbol server. Have your symbol server set up. With that stuff set up, what happens is I find your symbols, I load your symbols, and you can point to them after the fact. So if you've moved them, you can get to them. And if you've got source indexing turned on with the build that produced those symbols, what's stored in the symbol is also the location in TFS and the version of the file that was used to build your binaries. When you start debugging, I'm going to load up your symbols once I find them. From there, I can say, oh, Well, that was built with version 392 of this particular C# file. I'm going to go to TFS, and I'm going to pull back that version of the file, regardless of how many times you've changed it since then. So I'm going to get you back to the version of the source code that was used to build the binaries that was deployed into production. That's cool. All right, so I'm still spinning. Are these best practices documented somewhere? That's a heck of a good question. If anybody went to Brian Randall's session, I know he ranted and raved about it quite a lot. I honestly don't know if they are documented. I would sure hope so under anything around the build guidance with TFS. Somebody's going yes. So I hope that's a yes, they are documented, and not a yes, they should be. I think it's a yes, they are documented. Okay, I'm still spinning, so this is getting a little... Sorry, I didn't hear that. So how does this interact with the just-in-time compiler and its inline to method? That's where we can get into a bit of a disconnect. So what we're going to do is we're going to get you back to the line of code as far as we can determine it. We're not turning it off. No. So we're not affecting your optimization. So if you built a release build with symbols, any of the optimizations are still preserved. We don't affect how your binaries were generated or anything. We will instrument and stick in our code with the profiler, but we don't touch your optimization. So your optimizations are preserved. All right, let's get rid of TFS. I've just got a few minutes left. So let me just see if I can open up this file real quick again. Logs. This is off my desktop. Demo files, symbols. Open up this. And I want to show you this one in particular because this was collected with a different version of the web application than the one that I'm currently running. So this is actually going to show you exactly the problem that we have with the symbols. Okay, so here we go. No symbols found. You will see this a lot. I promise you that. It's not anything that's necessarily bad. If the code that's on the call stack is nothing but framework code, chances are you won't find the symbols unless you're connecting to the Microsoft Symbols server. I don't recommend it. You're not going to get a whole lot of value there. It's going to slow things down as well. But if I take a look at the call stack and I see symbol load information, fabricantfiber.web, that's my code. All right, sorry about the banging on. I get a little excited. If it's your code that's on the call stack, you should care. Because what you need to do is you need to get to your symbols. If it's, like I said, if it's just Microsoft code on the stack, you don't care. And if I come back to IntelliTrace, and if I look at the exception, and I also have a great search here, right? So I can also do a search for my null reference exception. And if I bring up the call stack window, right, and I see that my code is on there, but I'm getting no symbols found, you need to go and find your symbols, tools, options. What I need to do is I need to go to debugging because we're hooking into the debug engine. And I just need to point to where those symbols can be found. Whether it's on your symbol server, right, your whack, whatever path it is, or if you move them and you've stored them somewhere else, if you need to grab them, maybe you deployed them into production, doesn't matter, grab them, stick them local, point to them, say, okay, let's just close that because that's useless. Double click on this again. Let's try a different one. If I'm using TFS, I don't need to do this as long as I can get to the symbols wherever they are stored. Right. And what I'm thinking I have here is mismatched symbols because I have a few different logs there. Let me just try a different log file. Let's go with the more recent one. Exception data, null reference exception, start debugging. Okay. because I'm pointing to the matching symbols, I got to source. What's important to note here is I did not have the solution open when I started this. This is a brand new instance of Visual Studio that just got spun up when I opened up the log, although I had to do a little bit of song and dance while I was up here. I'm to the line of code where that exception was thrown. This is the magic that can happen. If I know where the source resides when it was built, I got matching symbols, I can get you to the line of code without you having to open the solution. And you can start navigating, and if it goes to other files, other source files, I'll load those up as well. So it's all quite slick. All right, I have very little time. So what I want to do is I want to just close this and give you a real quick sneak peek of some of the things that we're doing. Teletrace with calls information can be kind of slow. We collect a ton of data. Events information, much faster, very targeted information. It's very kind of surgical, right? So we're not collecting nearly as much. Unless, of course, you have a tight loop where you're calling a database 750,000 times, I'll be kind of slow. But that's a good hint for you to not call the database 750,000 times, right? Well, what we've added, if I just come into the service ticket repository here, because this is an interesting method, I can right-click on this method and say, you know what? I want that IntelliTrace events level collection for this method, but just this method. I can insert an IntelliTrace event. And I get this cool little symbol here, right? So that's kind of nice. And I can right-click here, and I can say, insert an IntelliTrace event. That's kind of cool. Now what I can do is I can go under debug, and we've got this IntelliTrace menu. I can say, export IntelliTrace events. And what I want to do is I want to take this, and I'm going to drop it into my IntelliTrace collector, and I've got this custom events folder, and I'm going to call this fab fiber. And if I go into my PowerShell and let's see if I have enough time. Oh, thank you. I don't know if I can import another module here or not. Oops. Let me just... module files. I'm going to create a new instance of PowerShell. And I've got time pressure. Isn't that just the case, right? Import module. And we go start IntelliTrace collection default. Default app pool collection plan. I'm just going to use the default one, and I'm going to drop to my logs folder. I've set this all up ahead of time. And now what it's going to do is it's going to go off and it's going to set up the environment variables for that particular application pool. And it might take a little bit of time. I suspect I'm going to run out of time, so I'm just going to talk to this instead. I'm using the exact same command line as I did before without these custom events. What we're going to do is we're going to check that folder to see if there's any what we're calling IntelliTrace fragments dropped into that location. We're going to pick them up. We're going to add them to the collection plan automatically. We're going to collect that calls level information for just those two methods. So it's saying, please say yes. I'll say yes. And now, when I open up the log, if I look at my custom event, I look at the IntelliTrace events, one of the categories that I'm going to see there is going to be called Fabricam Fiber. I can filter on just the Fabricam Fiber. I click on one of those, it's going to take me to the matching event, and it will show me the values of the parameters that were passed into that method. And just those things, and that's using the default low-level collection. So this is going to be as fast as we can get and collecting exactly the information that you want to collect for both entry and exit from the method. We're going to do both of those by default. And you can just go using the editor, right-click, say add here, add here, add here, add here, export them out, drop them onto the server, run IntelliTrace collection, open up the associated log, and you can get your specific information. So these are the things that are coming. That's post-RTM. That's a real sneak preview. I can show this in much greater detail if you want. Like I said, I'm at the booth, the Visual Studio ALM booth, pretty much all afternoon from 1 to 5 or so. All right. I know I didn't get to everybody's questions. I want to thank you very much for coming out. It was great seeing everybody, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the conference.